Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Fresh off celebrating their 30th anniversary as one of the most beloved bands in alt-rock history, Yola Tango is releasing Stuff Like That There on Matador Records.
How do you turn? Disappear when nowhere to go feels right. Maybe I can hide from the night. Maybe I'll just turn on the light so it's you.
The album comes out this week, and the band will go on tour next month, starting September 23rd at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall. Stuff Like That There is a conceptual sequel to Yola Tango's 1990 album, Fake Book. As such, the 14-song record features two new tunes, three rearranged and re-recorded Yola Tango songs, and nine covers.
Did you hear that lonesome whippoorwill? He sounds too blue to fly. That midnight train rides alone. I'm so lonesome I could cry.
The trio of Ira Kaplan, Georgia Hubley, and James McNew reunite with former member David Schramm on electric guitar, and the album is produced by Fake Book's producer, Gene Holder. Ira Kaplan and James McNew join us now. Welcome to the Roundtable.
Thanks.
Nice to be here.
So Stuff Like That There is being considered a sort of sequel to your 1990 record, Fake Book. Do you think of it that way? And as you were deciding to make it, did you think of it that way? Or is that how it sort of organically morphed as you were making a new record?
It's hard to even put this into words, but it was not organic. We did conceive of it as a sequel and did a couple of things explicitly because we saw it as a companion piece, bringing back Dave Schramm to play lead guitar, most astonishingly James taking it upon himself to learn how to play upright bass. I'm not sure if James would have done that without the Fake Book model to consider.
I probably wouldn't have. I definitely subscribe to the it's kind of a Catholic way of looking at things, but all bass players should do that at some point. It's like military service or home ownership. I think it's sort of a rite of passage, I think, to become an adult bass player is you got to play that thing.
Well, it's like you enlist in the services.
Yeah.
You have your choice of five-string electric bass.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Steinberg, headless bass, but you went with the obvious.
Fretless electric, too. That's kind of another kind of esoteric choice.
So how did
the union wants a guy who can double?
yeah, seriously.
So James, how did you learn to play upright bass? Who did you seek out for lessons, or were you able to sort of teach yourself, or a combination of that?
I'm largely homeschooled.
Mm-hmm.
I've only had it since January, and I've kind of been spending most of the time that I would usually dedicate to watching television practicing. Or at least practicing while watching television. So mostly I've just been working on my own. I had a little help here and there. I took some lessons from I went kind of right to the source. I found there's a legendary New York free jazz musician, Henry Grimes, and I took a couple of lessons at Henry's place, which were pretty cosmic in nature, but they were really helpful. I hope to check in and out with him when I can. But I don't know. It's going pretty good, I guess. I think I've pretty much mastered it. It's been a couple months now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
About half
no
a year. You're an expert.
Yeah. Let's move on to something. Maybe the harp. Maybe I'll take on the harp tonight.
And have that ready for the tour.
I don't know. I'm struggling to stay above water with that thing. But it's really fun to play. even though it's a colossal pain in the butt. I really do like it, and I really enjoy playing it.
What television programs best lend themselves to being practiced to?
The TV show Bar Rescue I find to be pretty great as far as for practicing upright bass, just rudiments and bowing. Every episode's the same. Every episode is literally the same, except that they change the location. And they may not even change the location, for all I know. But every segment is timed out exactly the same. The same stuff happens in each segment. It's pretty remarkable. They may have made all the episodes in one day, which is, you know, I don't mind that. It's great for practice.
As you mentioned, David Schramm is back for this record. How does that conversation happen? How do you bring him back in for the record and the tour?
Well, we see Dave from time to time. He participated in our 30th anniversary shows in New York. We've done things here and there. So it's, I mean, the idea of doing this has been in the air, unplucked for quite a while. So it just seemed, for some reason, that this was, well, it's not a coincidence that it's 25 years since the first one, and somehow the 30th anniversary all figured into it. We've been feeling reflective, I guess.
And then you need to take your reflection and, you didn't say, but maybe nostalgia from the old record and put it into a new project?
You know, I don't really think nostalgia plays into it that much,
okay,
which is why I left the word out.
Of course. Sorry.
No, that's all right. It's a natural, and it's probably even a fine line, but we have always played the songs from Fake Book. We don't play them that often, but we're conversant with them, and we play acoustically often, and we play with other guitar players from time to time. So it was fun to just kind of immerse ourselves back in that way of playing, and with the knowledge that we did the first record almost by accident. So what would happen if we did this one on purpose?
How do you select what songs you will cover?
I think it just depends on our mood from day to day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not speaking specifically about the songs that we included on stuff like that there, but Yolo Tango in general has a pretty open policy to cover songs. I think cover songs are kind of how we all learned to play music in the first place when we were kids, and it's still fun. It's kind of still as fun and as natural to do that as it was when I was a beginner.
I think there were a few songs from our repertoire that were kind of obvious choices for this record, some of which even made it to the record. And then once we had the idea of doing it, other songs just kind of kept just coming to us. Sometimes songs that we had played before and hadn't really thought about, and then songs that we had never played. It just, the record just kind of got its own momentum. So maybe like a third of the record are songs we learned specifically for this.
Following up on that, what was one of the covers that you've played often that did make its way onto stuff like that there?
Probably in recent years, Somebody's in Love is the one that we've played the most.
And what about that song do you connect with?
This is going to sound more clinical than the question seems to call for an answer, unlike the one I'm about to give. But one of the reasons we've done it so often is that all three of us sing it.
Mm-hmm.
It really lends itself to the end of a concert with Georgia coming up front, and it's very frequently the last song we do in an encore, and it just, to quote Ray Goulding's Barry Campbell character, it sends you home humming the melody. So it was, I think that's one of the reasons we've gravitated to it so often live. And then playing it on the record, it was fun because now Georgia is playing drums, which she never does live. Of course, we've got the upright bass replacing the electric bass, and we're adding Dave's electric guitar to the mix, which ended up changing our arrangement. It made us modify our arrangement to adapt all those things. So it is like even the songs we think we know, we are rethinking.
Somebody's in love with somebody. Somebody's in love with somebody. Somebody's in love with somebody. I know. Somebody's in love with somebody. Somebody's in love with somebody. Somebody's in love with somebody. I know. John's in love with John. John's in love with Jim. Jim's in love with someone I know, yeah. John's the only girl. She's the one I love. She's the girl I'm thinking of.
As you work up the new arrangement for the record, do you do that in rehearsal or in the studio or mentally and then you play it out? Or how does that work?
All of the above. Mm-hmm. Some of them got worked out in rehearsal. The one, I think in, I can be very spontaneous, which is one way of putting it. And another is I have trouble remembering what I'm supposed to do. So while we're recording Somebody's in Love specifically, I surprised everybody with a new rhythm guitar part, but it seemed to work, and James adapted his bass part to what I was doing, but that happened in the studio. Sometimes it even happens in rehearsal.
Our guests are Ira Kaplan and James McNew of Yola Tango. Their new album, Stuff Like That There, will be released on Matador Records tomorrow. How is it decided who will record lead vocals on a Yola Tango song?
I think Ira and I both think that in a perfect world, Georgia will sing everything. But it never works out that way.
We got closer than ever this time.
For the new songs on the album, when were those written and how were they chosen for the record?
Yeah, we wrote them this year, I think. We wrote them in the wintertime. We wanted to stay faithful to the concept of Fakebook, which had a few original songs that made their debut on that record.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought that this one should follow suit. And I guess with that in mind, the songs came out pretty naturally, just out of the three of us playing. It came, I don't know. We're kind of good at letting songs sneak up on us like that when when we need them.
But consequently, we don't, it's not like we've got a backlog of, yeah, two dozen songs. We go, which two would fit for this record?
So we
chose our two new songs to be the two new songs on this record.
As it turned out, we had two new songs.
So I do want to share one of the new songs with listeners. It is Rickety. Could you tell me a little bit more about that song, how it snuck up on you, if you recall?
Do you remember what song we were actually playing?
No.
No. A lot of times new songs of ours come out of just jams, I guess, and most of those jams are based on the rehearsal of an actual song, but we can't remember which one this one would have come out of. I forget. We chose the key of B, which is an unusual key for us. It's a side note, terrible key for beginning upright bass player.
Okay.
Just terrible. That's just asking for trouble. But it's a character builder as far as my responsibilities go. It came together really fast, as I recall. I think we just knew automatically that we could record that, and that Dave, his guitar playing, could fit in pretty nicely.
Way past the rising sun, four times four, one plus one. Had I went home, wait and see. Five times five. Three, consult the map around the bend, retrace our steps and up to the land. Through it all, we're on our feet like Rickety. Shaded brow, setting sun, stubby cane, Danny Dunn, broken glass between our toes. The closing fast. Through it all, we're on our feet like Rickety.
Yola Tango's new album, Stuff Like That There, will be released on Matador Records tomorrow, and the band will tour in support of the album, starting at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall on September 23rd.
Is there anything in particular that is special about working with producer Gene Holder?
Well, we go really far back with Gene. There were probably two bands that George and I both looked up to. I mean, the DBs, which was the band Gene was in, is a group that George and I were fans of before we even knew each other. And when we met and started looking back at some of the shows we had seen over the years, it was kind of remarkable that we had never met sooner, because the DBs, as great as they were not that popular. So it was really a testament to how shy George and I both were that we could be in these relatively empty rooms and still be happier plastered against whatever wall we're against than actually talking to a stranger. But Gene, for years, was so supportive of us in a lot of ways, more than we were supportive of each other, of ourselves. And he produced the original Fake Book record. He produced Present Yola Tango. He produced the first album, James Is On, May I Sing With Me. And it meant a great deal to us to just reconnect with him. It's funny, unlike Dave, who we really do see quite often, Gene is someone who we rarely bump into, and so it was nice to bump into him.
What kind of touch does he lend as a producer? How much input does he give you guys? How much do you need or want from him?
I think he appreciates the just letting things happen naturally, which is a nice, I think I know all of us in our approach to making records are very content to pile up textures and layers, and we'll undoubtedly do that the next time we make a record. And it's not that we wanted to do that with this one, but I think it made it appropriate to work with Gene again, who was happy to have the very informal approach to the record.
How did you choose what of your songs you would redo for this album?
I can't remember. No, honestly, I can't, because I think that just about every song that we write exists in multiple arrangements. There are loud and quiet versions of songs. There are slow and fast versions of songs. And we kind of keep all the arrangements more or less handy, and we're able to use them when we want them. So I don't know. I really felt that every song, with the exception of the songs from Fake Book, were pretty much up for grabs. Well, let's see. Which of our songs are on the record? I know Deeper Into Movies was a song that we didn't really play quiet that much.
We've done it at freewheeling shows.
Yeah, a couple times. Yeah, even that one we sort of re-examined and rearranged specifically for this recording, and sort of came out with kind of a surprise arrangement. That was kind of exciting.
It was a decision that we made well into the recording of the song, that I was trying to do this, approach my participation in the record from more of a folk, just no crazy tunings, and although I guess there's a lot of crazy tunings and finger-picking guitar, but just using a capo but not changing tunings around, and somehow we decided that that approach wasn't working on Deeper Into Movies, so we came up with a crazy tuning for that one. And so that was definitely one of the ones that we had to kind of find. We knew we liked the sound of George and I singing the song quietly without all the feedback roar of the original version, but we still needed to find the right bed for it.
Late at night, gazing out into the late at night, I see deep in the world till I open my eyes. Every day breaks each outside.
never seem to cry. Sometimes when I'm staring out my window, catch the stars and watch as they go by. I've been sending signals into outer space. They spiral like finger in the sky. And it blows my mind.
You're playing a show in Spain in early September and then kicking off a tour in support of the album on September 23rd at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, which is right in the heart of our region, just a few miles from where I'm sitting right now. Have you ever been to the Music Hall before?
I've heard wonderful things about the Music Hall, but I have not been there yet.
It's a fantastic venue. Everybody who plays there raves about the acoustics specifically, so we're very excited to have you launch your tour right in our region, and I can't wait to see you at that show.
Same here.
Yeah, it's been a long time since we've been in the Albany area.
Used to be a regular stop.
QE2, Bogies.
Bogies.
Ira Kaplan and James McNew of Yola Tango. Their new album, Stuff Like That There, will be released on Matador Records tomorrow. The tour in support of the new record begins on September 23rd at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall in Troy, New York. I'm Sarah LeDuc, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
In the morning light, your eyes are bright in the sun. Have you heard what I heard? The traffic chirp like a bird. It's a symphony.